in Lubbock.
Wow.
Because Texas Tech Monday night will be playing for the national championship.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Tortillas and Takes podcast, part of the 1012 Network and the official podcast for Rare Rated Sports. You are on once again with your boy, Albie Shore. And we are continuing our series of previewing Big 12 football teams in the 2022 season. It's football's almost here, so it's exciting. And so, of course, like with this preview, every time we have a guest on, I got to have the people's champ, that is Jeremy Gillen. What's up, Jeremy?
What's up, Albie? One more week of previews, 1 week closer to football. We had a happy half hour and just talking about how excited we are about the upcoming season, not necessarily about the content. It's just, as you know, it's exciting to have football back for some teams out there. It is always exciting when football season comes around because there are high hopes, high expectations with a lot of validity behind it. So we are going to have an episode today talking about one of those teams that just year in, year out gets to sit and think about, you know, what if we win the national championship?
You know, and it's funny as we get to this, this is always the one where I'm like, ah, we got to talk about this great team again. You know, this fan base that always gets to win the Big 12. Well, for the first time, we are talking about this team, the Oklahoma Sooners, and they're not coming off of a Big 12 championship for the first time in what feels like forever, but I think it's actually been legitimately 8+ years. So with that, got to bring on a good friend of mine, Corey, the founder of Big 12 podcast, the Big 12 Country podcast, sorry. What's going on, Corey?
No, I feel, how are we doing?
It's,
you guys doing all right?
We're doing fantastic, man. I mean, dude, so what is it like being a fan? What is it like being a fan of a team that like just wins like all the time? Like, it's just, what is that like knowing that, okay, we're just going to go in and just win another Big 12 championship?
Our listeners have no idea what that's like. So please, in your best wordsmithing, help us.
If I could sum it up in one word, easy.
I'm sick of you already. Okay,
it makes my life because there's already 100 years of heritage, stated facts, statistics, All Americans, Heisman winners, national titles that I start the conversation with. So it's just easy.
it's well,
I don't know the other way to put it.
Well, I will say this, Corey. I mean, y'all. Now we've done this series and so far every team we've talked to have been a team that's going to be in the Big 12 for a long time. Now, Oklahoma, the big news of the offseason, or I wouldn't say the offseason, of the last year, has been that y'all are only going to be part of the Big 12 for the next couple seasons. So as a fan of a team that is really, I mean, y'all have, I think that right now the plan is that Oklahoma will go to the SEC starting, I think, the 2024 season. How is that? I mean, are you excited about the move to the SEC, or how are you feeling about that?
Well, as we Oklahoma and Texas people like to say, for legal purposes, 2025, we don't want any legal liabilities out there that might get us in trouble with the new commissioner in the Big 12. But yeah, honestly, the more, you know, when it started, when it first came down, obviously there was a ton of excitement across the fan base. And I know that hurts to hear a little bit, but there was a lot of excitement. We probably got a little ahead of ourselves on how fast a process like this could take place. So there was a lot of 2022s and, you know, 2023s and we're going to move right away. And it was just like, and the more you started to think about it and it started to see the process unwind, because yes, we lived through the Big 12 and have a pretty good front row seat of what realignment looks like in a serious level like this. Not just, hey, the school of the blind went to this conference that nobody ever watches, but actual, you know, big power teams moving. You know, it's been so long, I think we had just forgot what the process looked like and what it took and what, you know, the legalities, the money, and a lot of money changing hands here when this goes down, you know. So this is not something you just walk into a room and do a Starbucks at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and just leave. So, you know, there's lawyers, all that. And I think we got a little ahead of ourselves. Over time, I think it's kind of revealed itself. It feels pretty strong, 2024. That's where, you know, I am at the moment. But if you'd asked me this right at a year ago, I'd have leaned 2023. So, and this is the SEC, as we know. And again, first of all, if you didn't catch, I do a Big 12 podcast, huge fan of the conference. If you ever want to know where I stand, even as an Oklahoma fan on this conference, there's an episode you can go back and listen to. I believe it's in the 2017 year of our show where we just sit and talk about why we decided to start a podcast and how much we love the conference. And there will be Big 12. There will be Texas Tech players mentioned. There will be all. If you ever want to know, go back and listen. I love this conference. This conference has basically followed my life, life timeline, if you will. 96 when I started, I was 12 years old enough to really understand sports. And I've, you know, it's been a part of me ever since. So all of these schools, all this history, all this does mean a lot to me. But allow me to say this, the SEC, this is another level. Obviously, they're going to do things a little differently, a little more reliably than maybe some of our commissioners in the past have. So I think maybe that's, and, you know, of course, ESPN, obviously, at the controls of all this. You know, they're going to have to get their teeth in this and figure. So, you know, I think that's why you've heard so many different projections, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Legal reasons, obviously 2025, but I feel pretty good about 2024. I'm sorry. That was a really long way to answer that question.
No, you're good. I mean, I do think it is, you know, if you're an Oklahoma fan, it is exciting, right? To be able to go and you always hear about SEC this, SEC that. So it is going to be exciting for your program to be able to go and play the LSUs and the Alabamas and still continue to beat up on Texas. That's always a good time for everybody else in the conference. So, but as we think about 2022, you did have some players leave, some that was expected to leave already, and Spencer Rattler, others that we were hoping to stay, right? And guys like Mario Williams, and then of course, quarterback Caleb Williams. And then you also had a certain head coach leave, a Red Raider head coach, and Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, I want to talk to you guys about that for a second, by the way, because I wasn't even going to mention that guy. I was going to just, you know, completely go over this podcast. But since we're on the Texas Tech podcast,
Why don't you
go ahead and be honest with us that was a spy y'all sent up to try to just completely to take Oklahoma out of the picture to where
100%,
and then eventually he comes back home the hero and y'all are national title winners a couple years later. Just go
once
ahead.
A Red Raider, everybody. Always a Red Raider.
Look, yeah. I'll say this. Yeah. I'll be completely honest
y'all
with
can
you.
Have him
I
think back.
I'll be more honest than most Tech fans will be on this. Lincoln Riley did y'all about as dirty as Chris Beard did Tech on the basketball side. It was bad. It was the way Lincoln Riley treated Oklahoma. It was bad. And there's really no
way. The only
thing
I would say
around that.
Sorry, the only thing I would say about that comparison, and again, Tech fans, please take no offense to this. I'm just honest to a fault. The biggest difference in what you just said is Texas and Texas Tech, which again, you're more recently a really good basketball program, but a historical program like Oklahoma from a standpoint, leaving an Oklahoma for a USC. Basically, two even-footed program. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Texas big budget. You could at least hear him out, you know.
Well, at the same time, though, at the time of Beard leaving, he just went to the national championship game in basketball. Texas had, like, they had a losing season just a couple years prior to that. Tech was willing to pay him more than Texas was. So he took a pay cut. And at the time, a program that was in a worse state, or to go to a program that was in a worse state. So he's still.
But it's also his alma mater, correct?
It was his alma mater, but he's also spent more years living.
That factor too.
But he's also spent more years living in Lubbock. But I will say this: with Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, I do give this credit is that he left just the way he did it. In that, you're doing it right after you lose. To Oklahoma State in Bedlam, where now if you're an Oklahoma fan, you're saying, well, you know, did you lose it on purpose? Like, and I get it, and maybe he didn't, but those thoughts come up, right? Like those thoughts of because
that's be a fair lot, thought, and that's a natural thought.
It's a natural thought.
Like, I don't think that we are that committed to this thing that we dedicate, you know, that we so emotionally care about week in and week out. We are part of the program, and to lose that game to a rival and then to just uproot like that, I feel like that was a logical reaction. I felt at least early, I felt like we were well within our rights.
I
think it went a little far, but.
Well, I think that with that, you know, it's kind of weird, and you're like, okay, well, nobody would do that, but it's just it would have made it a lot harder to leave for USC if Oklahoma is in the college football playoff. Had they beat Oklahoma State?
And
had they won every game for the rest of the year, you know, right? They would have only had one loss on their record, and they probably do get the number four spot ahead of Cincinnati. And then it's a lot harder to leave, right? Hell, I'd argue the Cincinnati coach only stayed because his team was in the college football playoff, right? And so
he was wanted hard. I mean, he was sought out by everybody.
Yeah, and then not to mention the whole "I am not going to LSU" comment. It was tough. But so take us so and well, now.
That's my favorite part of the story, though.
Yeah,
real quick. That's my favorite part of the story that nobody ever talks about. LSU had food, had catered in. Food was having a party, thought he was coming to Baton Rouge, like after that game, was expecting him to be there the next morning or that night, and basically found out, like the rest of us, that he's headed to Southern California. Now, personally, I think that's hilarious. I'm not a huge LSU fan, but you know, you can do with that what you want. I at least somebody else got stabbed in the back in the situation, too, is all I'm saying.
Well, now they have the fake Cajun. So there you go.
Oh, golly, man. Hey, That's been the best situation.
I will weekly tune into that television show in Baton Rouge just to see him clash with that culture, first of all. Secondly, he's going to lose games there, guys. Like, he's a quality coach. He's not built for that job. I'm sorry. I just don't think he is. I don't think he can handle it. I really don't. I think we'll see with his recruiting, because he's now away from Notre Dame, where he doesn't have that crutch of, well, our academic standards, we can't get the same players as everybody else. BS, they've been spitting forever. But then they want to act like they're God over college football. Anyway, so you have that problem. And then, you know, I'm curious to see, like, if he can't quite get to their standard and their, you know, when LSU's rolling, they're rolling. If he can't quite get to that, they're going to hang him out there. I mean, he's going to have to leave in the middle. It's going to be like when the Colts left Baltimore. He's going to have to, middle of the night, semi it out of that place, hope to God nobody sees him, maybe even call a few cops for escort, because they're going to kill him. By the time he loses enough games, because they already don't like him. Like, if you talk to some of their fans, like, straight up, there's people that are hopeful that he can win, but they're not a huge fan of the guy. So I just think all that whole storyline there. All I'm saying is, a college football fan, if you're listening, keep your eyes on that situation, because it's going to be fun.
So let's talk about fun. Oklahoma's offense. We're coming into 2022. Venables hires Ole Miss coordinator Jeff Lebby, who, if I'm not mistaken, played at Oklahoma right back in the day. This huge, like, spread attack that's been very successful in the SEC and UCF before that, which is super important. While he doesn't feature a very kind of Briles, because he just worked under Briles, like this Briles super spread, just kind of pass the ball around as much as possible. He does use that hyper tempo pace, right? Something that Oklahoma really slowed down with back in 2020, back last season, kind of a slower pace, right? Whether it's Spencer Rattler's struggles, Caleb Williams' youth, or just the changing philosophy for Lincoln Riley, you know. The hurry up, no huddle is back with Jeff Lebby. And there's a lot of offensive weapons. You know, you lose some people, but there's still a lot of people left for Oklahoma. Number one in my mind being that, you know, Lebby pulls Dylan Gabriel from UCF coming to Oklahoma. So tell us, Corey, a little bit about Oklahoma's offense. You know, who right now is the people you're looking at? Like, these are some people that are about to have their breakout seasons, or these are the people that we can have the most reliability on. Give us an outlook for Oklahoma's offense in 2022.
You mentioned, well, first, let me preface this real shortly. You're going to hear a lot of things about OU prediction wise this year from people, especially in camps just now starting. So things are going to start leaking out as they usually do. But you're going to hear a lot of, well, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. Nobody has a clue. This is a brand new staff, top to bottom. This is a team that lost, I don't want to say its identity, although eventually it will morph into a completely different version of itself. But in terms of some of its leaders and players, in that sense, those guys are gone. And even some of the guys, like a Spencer Rattler, who was just a good, as far as like you could rely on him to be a solid backup, and you know, after he got pulled, this stuff like that, you don't have, you know, at your disposal anymore. So you're going to hear a lot of things. Just people tell you they know. Trust me, they don't, for the most part. There's a few things we can put together and make educated guesses, and that's what we'll do. So I will just say that. Yes, you mentioned Dylan Gabriel. That has to be – and that's one thing I want to tell, because people keep asking us confidence. Why do you fans have confidence? And aside from our general just arrogance and because of OU and everything – it's because a lot of this stuff worked out really well in the situation we were in this year. One of them, a Dylan Gabriel transfer at quarterback. You get an experienced quarterback, you know, things like that. There's several key things that we can go throughout this offseason that allowed this team to come together in a way that if you would have looked at it in January, you'd have thought, you're crazy. There's no way. So that's, let's start with that. The transfer Gabriel, obviously that's a big deal. Experience in that offense, knows the system, is going to distribute the ball really quickly. Yes, they do like to do a lot more up-tempo than you saw from Oklahoma last year. The reason I'm excited about it more than Gabriel and anything is he tends to feature the run game more, whereas Riley, to a fault, would sometimes forget he had a 1,000-yard rusher sitting back there. And it became very frustrating. I personally believe, and any football coach who can argue this with me, and that's fine, I don't care. I personally believe ultimately led to a less physicality version of the offense and team over the couple-year period. I think that matters. If you don't practice enough, do it enough, you don't see it successfully enough happen, like a ball going through a net. You don't see it go through enough. You don't do it enough. You don't do it at a high level.
It's been the one thing that's decimated Tech over the years. So why not keep
that and Baker Mayfield. Okay, that's my last one. I won't say anything else.
You gotta drop that in there. Like,
I was hoping
you
would ask that, just follow up with another question, and I wouldn't.
Well, I will say this. So y'all have a quarterback who has probably the best name in all of college football, in General Booty. He's one of your backup quarterbacks, and I do love that. You did mention Dylan
Smoke too.
I forgot all about him. I didn't even see him here on the
roster.
That
might be my favorite name in college football ever.
There you go too. But as you mentioned Dylan Gabriel a little bit before, Dylan Gabriel, leader of the national champion UCF Knights. And so how excited are you to get Dylan Gabriel with Oklahoma? Like, is it another transfer similar to Kyler Murray or to where you're like, oh, okay, well, just another one coming in, no big deal, 1 year guy, it's going to be good for us? Or is he different? Is he exceptional in a way that you're really even more exciting than usual?
It's funny you asked me this question because I hadn't really been asked much about it. And if you know me personally, you know I have this thing about left-handed quarterbacks that I cannot get out of my head that drives me absolutely insane. And obviously Dylan is, which is funny because I'm left-handed. So you would think like, hey, why are you being so biased about it? But I can't stand him. Tebow on down the line, can't stand him. It's usually ugly. It usually doesn't look right. And receivers usually have trouble catching the ball with the spin from a different quarterback. That said, I feel like this one does distribute the ball better. There's some things I need to see him do in our offense, on our field, playing against our opponents. I need to see him do. So am I optimistic, excited about him? Yes. Do I think he can get the job done? Yes. If we're talking, are we looking for 2017 Baker, 2018 Kyler? I'm not there yet. I don't think. One, I'm not convinced he possesses the skill. I don't care, Oklahoma fans, fight me. Doesn't matter. I'm not convinced he possesses the skill to do that. Yes, I've seen the tape at UCF. I need to see him do that at Baylor, against Baylor in the Big 12 title. Like that's what I need. So like, and I know that's asking a lot, but I just, again, with the podcast over the years, I've learned when to just not make predictions I can't back up. And I'm not convinced he's there yet. I'm just not. But that probably sounded bad. I think he's going to have a good season. Don't take it the wrong way. I just don't know that you're going to get 2018 Kyler. That's all I'm trying to say.
Corey's like, well, let me rephrase what I just said.
He's going to throw for a lot of yards. Let's get real. I just don't know that we're talking Heisman. I don't know that he's in the Heisman discussion in November. Let's just put it that way.
Well, the thing about it is I actually agree with you. I'm not the biggest Dylan Gabriel fan. It's not that I think he's going to be bad or anything like that. He's an Oklahoma quarterback, so it's only so bad that you're going to be right when you have all the talent that's stacked around you. Right? But I do question if he's really going to be like a Kyler, or even, you know, I even question if he's going to be Jalen Hurts, right? I think Jalen Hurts is somebody that started off on fire and kind of trailed off as the year goes on. And I kind of see something similar with Dylan Gabriel.
And I think that's the problem, again, with my honesty. A lot of times people think I'm being negative. I'm not. I love the kid. I think he's first of all, super good human being. It seems like from the limited time he's been there, fantastic teammate. People seem to absolutely love him. Offensive line seems to love him, which is always important. And he clearly has put on tape enough to make you believe Oklahoma is at least going to be a problem on offense. Is that a better way to put it?
Yeah.
Does that make more sense than is that
Oklahoma always going to be a problem on offense?
Okay, this is a better way to put it. I don't think you're going to see a huge difference. Certainly not from last year. But I kind of throw that as a throwaway year for me because personally, I think he was checked out in September. But that's a much longer discussion. You do that back to, like, you know, 2020 is a little weird with the COVID, but 2020, you know, 2019, 2018, something like that. I think Oklahoma won't look that much different in terms of when you look at the end of the year, the numbers are going to be there.
Speaking of numbers, I mean, for Oklahoma last season, the worst thing offensively you guys did was rushing, and you were still 40th in the nation, 187 yards a game. Like,
it hurt, man. It's like tough people.
Hey, the classic cultures,
baby. It hurts. Doing that hurts almost as much as watching Oklahoma play defense for the last decade. Like, that's been brutal. And again, factor in Oklahoma's history and some of the play. And, you know, I mean, they were at one time, this program was very much known for its defense. And it's been absolutely embarrassing for the most part for the last decade. So, I mean, I don't have to tell Texas Tech fans that we played maybe the most embarrassing, but also fun, but also hysterical bananas game in the history of the Big 12 that night in Lubbock. So you guys don't need to be told that. I'm just saying, like, it's been hard to do. So when, you know, something like that happens, a program you're known for, we don't worry about running backs at Oklahoma. We just don't. I don't care who you bring here. Bring anybody. Bring me your water boy off your high school team. He's going to run for 400 yards. I don't care.
Well, it's not fair, like, that y'all had Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon was a backup running back. That's so wild.
Well, that was a little bit because of his own doing. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The odds he would have played his freshman year were very high. I'm not saying he starts, but he would have played.
You briefly mentioned defense, Corey, and I'm so glad you did for half a second. Let's switch to defense. You know, for the past couple of years, you had Alex Grinch kind of design his defense. It was speed everywhere, and it kind of burnt you. I mean, the secondary you had last year, just pass defense in general, was probably the weakest part of Oklahoma defense, right? You do pull over the offseason two really good starters in Trey Morrison from UNC, CJ Colton from Wyoming. You know, those will be helpful. But you got Venables now, right, as a head coach. He's like, you know what? Defense. He built, you know, Clemson. He wants big five-star defensive lines. He wants national championships that are built off of defensive schemes. And it's going to take a couple years, obviously, to do that. But he's obviously changing the intensity around Oklahoma. It's like changing the culture and the mindset of Oklahoma. Like, hey, we're going to start this where the defense is where this is going to start, right? Can you tell us a little bit, like, the same way with offense, like, you mentioned it, that off, like, defense has kind of been a thorn in Oklahoma's side. It's a lot more downhill. It's a lot more, like, if we're just kind of like color grading it, it's a lot more yellow and red versus your green offense. And so, you know, what can you tell people about Oklahoma's defense going into this year? Because it's a whole different pedagogy.
Well, that Brent Venables. Let me first say it's fun for the first time since I've been doing this podcast. Kind of like Albie Wallago mentioned the Big 12 championship first time, you know, you can. People get mad at me when I would pick OU every year, but then I kept telling them, like, give me a reason not to. Like, I'll listen. I am open to whatever you have to say. But from, like, 2015 on, give me a reason not to pick Oklahoma to win the Big 12. Kind of the same thing here. Like, you know, it's we don't like to really talk about the defense a whole lot. So it's just nice to finally be able to talk from that standpoint of, hey, we're not having to, you know, we're not carrying, hey, you're the champion, so everybody expects you to win. It's nice to be able to talk from that standpoint of, hey, yeah, some optimism on defense for once. So it's nice to be able to do that. In terms of, you know, just I'm excited. We know the system. He basically runs a 4-3 for the most part. Things I'm super excited to see just what he does with all these athletes. I mean, here's the thing. Riley, while he recruited decently defensively, obviously, they weren't always the biggest guys, but there was a lot of athletic ability out there. A lot of athletes would get recruited, you know, to the guys with the athlete designation, things like that. There's a lot of them dudes running around right now. And I am just it's kind of almost nostalgic in a way, because when Bob came in, he did this. You saw the staff, him and Mike, back and forth over the first couple of years. Hey, this guy belongs on offense. He's got no business over here. Hey, this guy belongs on defense. He shouldn't be over here. This receiver should be playing corner. That's what I'm looking forward to the most. And I know that's a nerdy, weird thing and not the answer you're wanting. You're wanting to know if like seven defensive linemen are going to line up and absolutely level the offensive line and sack the corner. I'm sorry. I'm not that. Just, I am more detail oriented than that. I want to know, like, you know, like, hey, you know, they've been playing this guy on the, you know, at safety for 3 years under Grinch, but he's the best wide receiver, or second best wide receiver on the team after 4 weeks. And then I can tag Grinch and be like, you dumbass. As far as the defensive side of the ball, who I'm most excited about, if you want that, Jalen Redmond returning to the defensive line. I forget the awards because I get the defensive ones mixed up for overall player versus defensive lineman, but he was a preseason All-American named recently for one of those. Forgive me. I should have had that ready to go and I forgot it, but he's fantastic. I think he's going to do wonderful. And this is the staff he needed. This is the staff I wish we had last year with Perrion Winfrey. This is the staff I wish we had. Again, here we go. The name discussion before the show. The linebacker that plays for the Los Angeles Chargers, Murray. You know, a guy like that who just, you watch him walk out into a football field and you go, this guy was born to play football. He was born to play linebacker. Let him go. And he never got to really see it. Some his senior year. And I think, honestly, if you held him down and asked him, a lot of that was probably his own intuition of what he needs to do as a player, not necessarily maybe what they were telling him. So, you know, things like that. That's what I'm excited about. I know that's the nerdy answer. They brought in some transfers I do like. You know, and Reggie Grimes, not a transfer, but Reggie Grimes, I'm super excited about, see what he does this year. Guys who were filled in, you know, kind of backup rotational guys on the defensive line last year, because obviously OU lost some very, very key pieces there. Three guys across the front seven that were huge, huge game changers for the team. So that's the question. Is who can those guys, obviously they're good enough to play. We know that. We've seen it on tape. Can they then now become those difference makers that they need to take that next step? That's what we'll wait and see.
Well, I will say, and you kind of talk about the not being there for Oklahoma, not being there yet with the Oklahoma defense, but really seeing what can happen when you have a guy like Brent Venables kind of infusing his personality, infusing his defensive systems in there. But I think one thing that I think most of our listeners can agree with is that the best way to really infuse and uplift your finances is by getting the franchise coach that is Adam Goldman. So shout out to Adam Goldman, friend of the podcast. He's a franchise consultant who is an experienced investor, serial entrepreneur, and master franchiser. And he's a Red Raider grad. And he's going to be able to help all of our listeners and you, Corey, even though you're not a Red Raider grad, even though you're not a Red Raider by heart, Adam Goldman will still be there to help you and get the franchise that you need, right? If you want to really expand your portfolio, open up your own franchise, have a Subway owned by Corey, got a sub with a Big 12 country Subway, Adam Goldman will be able to help you out with that and find out the best way to get your finances in order to be able to do that and achieve that, right? Right now, inflation is wild and Adam's here to help you. So that is Adam Goldman at franchisecoach.net. Make sure to book a time with him and tell him that Tortillas and Takes sent you. Right. That way that he's a friend of the pod and he knows that you're a friend of the pod too. So that again is Adam Goldman at franchisecoach.net. So Corey. So I will say this, Corey. It's prediction time. One reason why I want to bring you on here is because you are like we talked about, you're one of the more level-headed Oklahoma fans. It's not just going to be a 15-0 to the national championship every year with Corey here. So what is the prediction that you have set in Brent Venables' first year, Dylan Gabriel's first year? But you're still the Oklahoma Sooner. So are you getting back to the perch? Are we going to see an undefeated season? What do you think?
I think 10 wins is not crazy. Nine is, I feel, more than doable. Nine, I don't really see a path into the Big 12 title game. Bargaining, you know, unless one of the other contenders just really falls on their face, because I feel like that group at the top, and it's weird this year because we have to set OU aside as, and just instead of just assuming they're there, because to me, again, to me, they're TBD. It's too, there's too much, there's too many questions you can't answer. I don't care how, what people tell you. Sorry. I mean, talk with my hands. Sometimes I hit the microphone. There's too many people that are going to tell you, hey, this is that. No, it's they're guessing. So that's kind of what we're doing here. Looking at the schedules among all 12 teams, which I have, or 10 teams, I'm already ahead of myself for when we start adding teams, all 10 teams. I look at them and I see a group kind of emerge in the top of the conference that is going to be steady enough beyond a shadow of a doubt that I think OU has to win 10 to get back into the Big 12 championship. Personally, I think if they get in the game, they're going to win. That's just their house. That's their game. If we make that game, I'll go to Vegas and put money on OU. And I don't bet on OU any other time. I refuse. I'm superstitious, former mainly baseball player, played football too, other things, but very superstitious about things. So I don't bet on OU. But that one, you know, if we, I don't care who it is. I really don't. That game, that stadium, I like our chances. So I think 10 wins, they get in, they could play. The optimist, if I could talk, in me says that happens. The realist, setting my OU fandom aside in me, says 9 is probably more feasible. And they don't make the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, so I think when you look at the season, it's kind of an interesting setup. You got UTEP, Kent State. Okay, fine. It's weeks 3 and 4 for me. It's the Nebraska and then at home against Kansas State back-to-back. Of course, Martinez goes to Nebraska or goes to Kansas State from Nebraska. I think Oklahoma loses one of those two. I'm not sure which one it is. I know we had Scott on and he's pretty optimistic about Kansas State's chances this season. But outside of that, really the only threatening, it comes in the second half against Baylor. And then, of course, you can never count out the Bedlam game. So for me, it's like a 9 or 10 win season for Oklahoma. But I don't see them winning the championship just with how good Baylor is. With everything, Oklahoma is one of the most complete teams in the Big 12 this year, but I think they have a lot of things they have to figure out within that. So for me, you know, 9 or 10 wins this season.
So I'll say this. Parker @StatsOfWar on Twitter, he had a question. He put out the 6 games of Oklahoma and he said, what is their record after the 6 games? And I think most people said 5-1, but a few people said 4-2, and I'm one of them. I was like, man, 4-2, because you have at Nebraska, home against Kansas State, and then the Dallas game against Texas will be virtual toss-ups. And it's a toss-up, not because Nebraska's, like, Oklahoma's that much better. Like Nebraska's that good. It's just, it's a home game in Nebraska. That game is going to be a game that could potentially save Scott Frost's job. Like, that is going to be such a, and Nebraska's going to do everything in their power to try to win that game. And I'm not saying Nebraska wins it, but I look at Nebraska, K-State, and Texas and say, Oklahoma's probably losing 2 of those. Right? And we'll even throw TCU in there just because it's a road game, even though I don't really think that's going to be too much of a problem. But you know, I look at Oklahoma and say that Oklahoma's probably losing 2 of those there. Then you have the back half where you have at Iowa State, home against Baylor, home against Oklahoma State. And I say, again, Oklahoma's probably losing 2 of those. And so I kind of have it 8-4, the best 9-3. And my main thing is that it's not because Oklahoma's Oklahoma. And they're great, and they're always going to be great. And they have a top 10 recruiting class again. And that whole team has a recruiting average, I think, of like 6th nationally. And like, they're always going to be fantastic. But I am going to go with the same logic I've always gone with everything, is that, excuse me, when you have a new coach and you have a new quarterback, you're going to lose more games than you probably should. Right? I felt the same way about Texas last year when everybody was predicting a 9-win season for Texas. My prediction was 7-5. And then they even was worse than that. Because they had a new coach and a new quarterback. And even with Dillon Gabriel, and I kind of agree with you, Corey, in that I'm just not a huge Dillon Gabriel fan. I think he's more Jalen Hurts than he is Kyler Murray, and that he's a guy that doesn't have all the tools that a Baker or Kyler or Sam Bradford necessarily have, and that he's going to need that coaching. And Jeff Lebby, sure, he has some familiarity, but it's also been years since Jeff Lebby and Dillon Gabriel were together. If Dillon Gabriel goes down, Oklahoma's kind of at an impasse, and I don't see them making the Big 12 tournament. Oklahoma has proven me wrong so many times, I can't even count. So I'm probably wrong on this as well. But I got 8-4, maybe 9-3, but I do not see them in the Big 12 championship game either. Like, and all that's mentioned, I think this is the first year, I want to say, since they started putting it out, that Oklahoma, I mean, I don't count the fact that Mike Turk the punter made the preseason Big 12 team. Nobody else on offense or defense made the Big 12 or the preseason Big 12 team for Oklahoma. And it's a big thing because, and then I the first thing I saw, I was like, man, that's crazy. And I looked at Oklahoma roster and I was like, but who would make the preseason Big 12 team? So it's one of those things where I think Oklahoma is still talented like usual, but they're not the same Oklahoma Sooners. It's a brand new head coach, brand new quarterback. And sure, even if you looked at the roster and said that's a 10-win team, new coach, new quarterback, you got to drop them a game or two.
Because that's and you're expanding on kind of what I've been trying to say this whole show is that, like, we can make educated guesses about a lot of this stuff. Either A, there's a returning starter, or B, the staying coach is retained on staff, like in the case of our offensive line coach, Beanbo, et cetera, et cetera. But the picture of things that I could throw at a wall and try to guess at is much larger. You talk about a new quarterback being a big issue, new staff, you know, and that happens, that sort of thing. The thing that tends to bail those teams out is a defense they know they can count on that absolutely stops people. A running game that is usually physical. It chews up clock, allows the other offense to stay off the field so that they can get by, that sort of thing. Well, where do you point to that with Oklahoma? Because you lost enough playmakers, stars, that you have to figure out, okay, who's going to make those plays this year, but also transfers, and there's guys that are moving positions that we've seen. And so it's like, you can't say that. You can. A lot of Oklahoma fans will, because it's Brent Venables. But in all honesty, in reality, if you're being honest with yourself, you can't say, well, okay, they can lean on the heels of this defense. Well, then you look at the run game. It's Eric Gray, who personally, one of my bright spots this year, I think will absolutely shine. You know, later on, Marcus Major, who likely will be the number two, although I think in the end, and maybe to fit a power run game better, could be the starter before the end of the year. Just a physical specimen, kid out of Oklahoma. But, you know, those weren't your starters last year. I mean, those weren't your major contributors, at least not to the end of the year, or sparsely in the case of Eric Gray. So if you can't point to the run game that you know you got, you can't point to the defense that you'll beyond a shadow of a doubt know you got. The offensive line, which we didn't even really touch on, was an absolute joke by our standards last year. There are guys there that – now, let me be clear. I think that some of that gets cleared up among the new system. And also, I think a transfer like Wayne Morris, who came in from Tennessee, now a year here, probably has a little better year this year, things like that. But that's not even – we're not even getting on the offensive line, which if you ask me what the biggest question of this team is this year, it's that. It sounds really negative. And it's more, but it's just me trying to get people to understand. And to your larger point, A, the questions I can't answer yet. I mean, I can answer. I can give you an educated guess about anything you want, but beyond a shadow of a doubt answer. And then also to your point about the record, you could make a case and not sound crazy that bowl eligibility for this team, you know, if you're just saying straight up facts, list them out on paper, you could actually make a case that bowl eligibility is into play here. Like for a team like this, with everything that they have to deal with coming back from last year versus what this team looked like last year.
You're right for sure. But I really appreciate you, Corey, being on this podcast. It's been a great time. Jeremy, you got anything else you want to say to the people?
No, man, just super excited for football season coming up. And we have more previews. We're not done with Big 12 schools, so be sure to stay tuned. And for Dylan, if you like this podcast, if you like our podcast, you just like tortillas, man, please leave us a review. Write commentary on that. It's really helpful for us to understand what you guys like, what you guys don't like. If you like everything, awesome. We'll send you a koozie. But yeah, be sure to leave us a review.
Yep. And that's all. I mean, yeah, Jeremy took the words right out of my mouth. So there we go. Thanks again for Corey for being on here with us. So for Corey, for Jeremy, this is Albie Shore, and you've been listening. That's right. Well, if anything, Texas is way more farther down the line than just right after Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. So, you're good. But you, everybody listening here, you've been listening to the Tortillas and Takes podcast. As always, stay wrecked, people.